Hey y'all, Cass here. First off, let me thank you all for listening and subscribing to our show. We couldn't do it without you, and especially those that support us through Patreon. It allows us to do shows like the one you're about to hear, and much, much more. A buck goes a long way, and for you high rollers out there, we have levels that let you come on the show as a guest and get beer served from Augie and John's cellars. Plus, there are other levels as well. It's all on stealthisbeer.com. Go check it out, and now enjoy this very special episode. Cheers. Discussion about beer over beer by a couple of guys that think about beer way too much. So thank you guys for coming out to our second live show. We have a very special guest for you tonight. You probably recognize him. His name is Sam, and he is from Dogfish Head.
Pronounce his last name, Cass.
Calagione.
Nice touch.
Yes, good job. Ryan Cass,
welcome,
everybody.
Welcome.
Sam Calagione, Dogfish Head. Do it.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Nice to see you.
I was standing next to Jim when you said that. I'm like, Sam Adams or Sam Calagione? Which?
All right, hey, y'all. It's 5 o'clock on Monday, nope. And we are stealing beer. I am Augie Carton.
Hi, I'm John Hall.
Joined by John Hall. And we are on location, which I'm sure you can hear from the kind of cool tinny echo going on in here. We are being hosted by Sam Adams, Boston Brewery. Jim Cook is actually in the room, which is badass. As you all know, I've never met him. So I guess we're going to
I think you'll have an opportunity in a minute.
But like most our live shows, I imagine this will get loosey-goosey and far away from me. So I'm going to try to start it down a path and just, like we do, converse and see where it goes. We've had a Sam Calagione episode before. It was a train wreck. It happened in a hotel in this town. And at some point, we'll have to talk about what happens in Boston stays in Boston. But that was all me getting to talk to a kind of an idol the first time and trying to impress him. And I want to kind of, now that we've gotten to settle in and we all know Sam and Sam knows us, I want to frame all this discussion as we try to do and just keep it about what's going on in beer and what things are. But I'd like to give it the context of artistry, because artistry is kind of bothering me, 7 years in a carton, where we are and what's going on. And one of my favorite stories about aspiring artistry was said on a podcast by Penn Jillette of Penn & Teller. And he said he had a friend who was studying to be an artist who went to one of his professors back in the 70s. And the guy was very concerned he was too much like Picasso. Everything he was doing was so derivative and so directly inspired by Picasso that he wasn't doing any original art, and he wanted to be an original artist. So what the teacher, the professor, said to him was, go do an exact copy of Picasso. Go grab a Picasso, paint it as exactly as you can. Everything that's different, that's you. Go make that art. So you guys have a beer in front of you that is kind of my experiment on that. We called it 99 Editions. And this was kind of 7 years in a carton. You know, we've been a lot of paths. We've done truffle beers. We've reinvented sugar. We keep doing all that weird shit. But all that, whatever school of art carton is, I believe, downstream from Sam. And I just want to keep the context per where you find yourself 30 years in. And Jim, we're going to talk to you soon, which is super exciting. But where the art is headed and what we're losing and what we aren't losing, and are we worried about losing things that we are or not? So this is my kind of tribute to your peppering beers in our kind of herbing style. The jokes are all Calagione jokes. It's 99 barrels boiled for 99 minutes with 9.9 kilos added every minute over 99 minutes with 9 types of hops added at the dry hop, and it's a clean East Coast beer.
God, your brewers must hate you.
Everybody hates me. Everybody hates me. But so that's it. And this is my Picasso with all the mistakes. So mostly what I want to hear from you is,
thanks, Justin,
with your perspective as kind of the leader of one of the schools, what's going on in beer these days that is still art, and what's going on that is overproduction style stuff? Yeah. Jump there.
Nice. And I had a good chat with John earlier today about what is Extreme
Nobody's
Brewing.
Nobody's ever had a good chat with
I did. And, you know, Extreme Brewing is alive and well and thriving, but it is true that it's harder to find white space today than it was 5, 10, 20 years ago when so many breweries are doing so many different cool things in their own directions, you know, outside the Rhine Heights Gebot. I want to start by saying this is a beautiful beer, Augie, and to your brewing team, this is a beautiful beer. So the tribute.
Later on, you guys tell me if he's telling the truth, because he's a gentleman. We've put him in weird situations than this in the last couple of years.
You know, with great humility, it means a lot to me that you guys went on this journey. But yeah, I mean, what was Extreme 20 years ago is so different than now. And I think the earliest moment that the word Extreme got associated with the craft brewing movement was late 90s, early 2000s. There was a writer, Ken Wells, who did a book called Travels with Barley.
And he did Wall Street Journal reporter.
Exactly.
And it starts at the Blind Tiger, which made me
Does
so
really?
Happy. Yeah, his first beer on the journey starts at the Blind Tiger, which you all know I love.
Yep. And he did a story, and it mostly focused on Boston Beer and Dogfish Head. And we had a blast in the, you know, Jim and Boston Beer kind of broke the... You know, you guys have seen The Right Stuff. Anyone seen the great movie based on the great book, The Right Stuff? And I don't know about you, but as the little guys, like we are, David's among Goliaths, I was rooting for the guys that weren't trying to get to way out of space, but the guys were just trying to do crazy shit right on the edge of the atmosphere. And that book talked about that. And when that story came out, it was kind of about that moment when a bunch of brewers were saying, well, wow, we really are getting to understand yeast and its capabilities and fermentable sugars and their capabilities and going for really big beers. And I think Dogfish and Boston Beer went back and forth brewing the strongest beer in the world for a number of years. And we always had the respect for beer that distilling doesn't count, whether it was ice distilling or hot distilling. Some other breweries that shall go not named on their own creative journey chose to break that different sound barrier. But we had a lot of fun pressing that real envelope of true beer experimental trials in that era. And they eventually won. You know, I was like, all right, that we were like... Fists were up in a beautiful, respectful way. I do remember a
beautiful,
moment.
Beautiful, respectful fists?
Beautiful, respectful fists.
That's a beer name if it hasn't been named already.
Honey, get me my fanciest ring. I've got to go punch Jim Cook.
It was great because at one moment, we did, you guys did Triple Bock, we did Worldwide, and then you guys did Millennium right then, And Jim was like, this has been great, Sam. Let's keep it going. I'm going to send you a bottle, a beautiful wood box, which I still have, bottle with a bottle of mine in it. And if you could send me a case of Worldwide Stout, that'd be awesome. I'm like, wait a second, a case for a bottle? That doesn't... But it was a beautiful bottle.
But wait. All right, so thieves, some of you must trade, right? What is that called when it doesn't match dollar for dollars, when it's like 6-1 or something? What do they call it? There's a name for it, right? It was the first.
Cass, what is it?
Razzling? Was it the first beer. Razzling? I don't know.
Cass doesn't trade beer.
It is Razzling.
Is it?
Yeah, so you do trade beer.
At any rate, it was a very fair trade. I still have the wooden thing in my cellar. But back to what is Extreme now. It's harder to find white space. Now there's thousands of breweries brewing outside the lines of the Rhine Heights Gebot. But that's awesome, because when you find the white space in a place where it's harder to find, it's that much more exhilarating. I know JC's been on that trip, and a lot of people in this room have been on that trip. So I think it's
JC Tatra is in the room too.
Shh.
God.
That's a surprise for later.
But Sam, I'd say the biggest difference.
Sam did it first.
I did?
Yeah. I'd say the biggest. Everything Hall just said. Caligione's fine. You stop.
Oh, man. I would say the biggest difference is the first iteration of Extreme coming out of Ken Wells' story and the work we were doing in the late 90s, early 2000s, was that immediately people assumed it meant ABV. And I think now it's about intensity of flavors and doing unique things with ingredients and techniques that have nothing to do with. And I got to give shouts to the Alstrom brothers that early on, we've been the sponsors of Dogfish, the EBF since I think it started or soon after. And early on, we said, wait a second, because there were some writers like Lou Bryson, who's our pal, who quickly started, you know, he's a great guy, great brewer. One of the,
Lou Bryson, you know, everybody.
Right up there with Michael Jackson and a lot of folks, on OG journalists, evangelists. But early on, he tested us about saying, oh, extreme just means strong. So at some point, we did mandate that if you wanted to do EBF, you could do whatever you wanted, but at least bring one beer sub 5 ABV. Mm-hmm. And it got a lot of us really thinking about how do we do something creative and unique sub 5 ABV. And it's so awesome to see a lot of sub 5 ABV beers that are really exotic and exciting.
And
I like it.
In that conversation that we had earlier today, though, you were talking about looking at beer on the molecular level, which I found really interesting as well, of just sort of getting into not just the broad strokes, but really sort of the, you know, the nitty gritty. And obviously in art, which Augie was talking about earlier, you know, it's the finer details as opposed to the broad strokes that can actually be most impactful in some ways. And you've come into that in the last couple of years. This is like your new period.
Yeah. Actually, you're touching
like my blue period, staying on the Picasso.
Well, so yeah. Staying for the art. But,
yeah.
But so here's the thing. I love this because you both have led me into my next question. Because we ran. So here's the. I was
we
ready
do have
for
a
this.
Black glass
I was
at some
ready
point.
For this in case we went too far to really get back to the art conversation. And New York Magazine just did a very cool, no matter who the fuck you are, go be an artist article. And one of the things they said was build your totem. Just make a piece of art that is your five things. Go find them. Screw them together, make them a thing this big, and what it be it a lobster claw or a soccer ball, and make your story. So what I thought would be fun, and I think it works into what you're just saying for where you've been, is just make that totem for me. We'll start talking about the black glass while you think about it, but make that totem for me on five Dogfish beers of all the things you've ever done.
Oh, man.
I think but you were famous.
Like, why did I sign
you were just
to do
touching
this.
On yeah. it, but you were famous for Dogfish did nothing below 7 for 25 years, and one of the coolest beers you've ever made is Sequench. So This totem question made me excited to throw into your world and kind of shake you up a little bit, because what was that progression in five beers? From the carpets on the bottom of the bottles to Sequench.
Right.
Build that totem. And while you
while you think about that, Augie,
I will spiel about the black glass.
What brings us together?
Because let's face it, the only reason to listen to the show is for that thing I'm almost good at, which is what brings us together on Sealess Beer is a candid conversation of beer. Not what we thought it would be, not what we traded for it, not case versus box, wood box bottle. but what it's doing, where we want it, how it does. So John Ibling can drink completely blind. Wow, Sam Adams beers are strong. So John and I drink completely blind out of opaque black glasses, and you guys are all doing it with us, right?
Yeah, everybody in the audience.
In the room know
guys.
What they're drinking?
Cheers to everyone.
Does anybody know what they're drinking? Right? So this is blind for everybody. Sam, you know what you're drinking?
Nope.
Did you pick
it? Kennedy knows, but
you fucking did? Kennedy.
Cass knows.
Kennedy, you're the man. You're the man we're all afraid of. You're the man. You know. Anyway.
Wow, so, how many beers have you had? You just paid Justin a compliment.
No. You heard it wrong. He's the man, dude. He's the man.
Oh, yeah.
He knows.
Run away fast.
That's right. Anyway, so do it with us.
Hello, Dankness, my old friend.
Right? So, there's hugs going on. Perfect. So
Kate and Suzanne from the Craft Beer Cellar
what
just
you
walked
getting?
In. This is great. I all dank, all, you know.
I've got that New England yeast
yeah.
right through everything, right? So call it Conan. JC, if you have one, you can tell me which one it is.
Oh, okay. So it's cool
it's
when
New
you
England
say
or
it.
Conan. Well, somebody let the
Sam ruined it, and then I piled on, and now you're just joining in.
There's a little bit of vanilla to it, but I think that's the yeast.
I'm getting this like herbal thing as well. Like at first, I was thinking sage, and then I was kind of getting like a peppermint or some sort of weird thing that
so
doesn't necessarily this, belong.
But when you
in
and I do
style,
this together,
everything
you,
belongs in the style.
You're okay with it because I suspect there's mosaic. When I smell pellets, I.
Yeah, I've moved
and
on from
you've
my.
Moved on, you're no longer like, anti-mosaic.
No, I'm fully anti-mosaic, and there's actually one of the first times that I had mosaic was when it was still an experimental beer, and Sam and Jim made one called Savored Flowers about I don't know, 50 years ago when we were all much younger.
I feel like if we say Jim's name one more time, he should just come stand with us because we're torturing him.
Jim, are you Will drinking you come out over, of a black Jim? Glass?
We're going to wait.
Jim Cook, everybody.
Jim Woo! Cook, everybody. Your host for the night. And we... I
step
swear
up.
To get jump on the
step
mic.
Up.
That's your
yeah,
mic.
No,
that's
your mic.
Our honest intention was to surprise everybody with you and yeah. bring it in, but nobody has ignored your presence in the room, so it's just weird. So
and it's like, not just because of your Christmas sweater.
What's yeah. funny is I'm not sure if you know this, and I'm not sure you want anyone to know this, but John considers you a good friend and talks about you all the time, and he tells me every time.
It's okay. Time, I talk about him all the time.
Every time that when he introduces us, I'm going to see you in the blue shirt and the khakis, and you walked in here in a ridiculous Christmas sweater.
You threw them on.
And literally nothing in the world has ever made me happier than looking at Hall and be like, are you ever right on anything?
Also, blue shirt and khakis underneath.
Yeah, but doesn't matter.
Sweater so this over. Is
what
this
you
is
said
now
would happen
too,
did not happen.
This
so
is
thank
now
you
too.
For joining us at your company Christmas party. Yeah. Thanks for giving us a home, and cheers, man. Thanks for having
yeah,
us.
Yeah, thanks for coming in.
Do you know what you're drinking?
Do you know what we're
do
drinking?
Do you know what you're drinking?
Boom sauce.
Boom sauce? All right.
Okay.
I guess it's now I know. Well done, sir. I feel like somebody might have told you, but that yeah. makes total sense for what I was yeah.
Is it really? Is it boom sauce?
Yeah. So, Jim, the premise of the
so
show
So nobody
is...
told Jim how the show works.
We don't know what the beer is in the black glass until after we've talked about it, and then there's this great reveal.
Anyway.
It's... Now, how do you know I'm right?
To be
and
fair,
this is,
you nailed
wait,
it, but,
don't tell me. Yeah.
So all I was going to say it is it's all light. Those slutty things doing that slutty party kind of fun, trap, good time beer.
Yeah.
And that's what I was going to say. Yeah. And I was going to bring it to that party.
All right, great.
When Brian Cash shows up with all the cans he traded for, I'm going to bring this. All right, so now, Jim, I want you to Hi. Work on your five beers for your totem while Sam tells us his five beers for his totem. Because I've got five for you. I don't have five for him.
Is this about, like, the evolution of beers?
Just, you tell me, man. Like you said, it can be a lobster claw or a soccer ball. You just pick.
Yeah, he thinks about the base beers. Question, not the nuance of it.
It's, no, I'm not a nuance guy.
Yeah.
All right.
Broad strokes, not fine points.
So for
You're not obliged to say anybody else's yeah. beer. I meant it to be a dogfish question. But yeah. if you want to build, you know, yeah. just
Yeah, Sam, this is your imaginary totem.
Right. And how it gets there. What's it built to and why?
Right. So, I mean, I grew up here. I grew up in Western Mass, Greenfield, Mass, down the road from here. And my dad was, he liked to drink beer, and he liked to drink beer that was harder to find. So I cut my teeth on Moosehead. He was a big Moosehead fan.
Nice.
Sam Adams Lager was an
you
early
had
beer
antler marks on your belly?
I don't, but you got they're from the Maritimes, right?
Yeah, Moosehead. New Brunswick.
Yeah. So East Coast, and they're kind of like the Yingling of Canada, right?
Yeah,
Moosehead.
The last
still family owned,
independent. Yeah.
Yep. So that was a big one for me.
All right, I like that.
And then when I think of our evolution at Dogfish, I would say early on raison d'etre as.
Yeah.
Beer wine hybrid beer. We started doing in 96. I would say 90 minute, which Greg Cook told me was the first packaged beer to have the word Imperial IPA on it.
Yep. And no right. relation from Stone, but no relation to you, Jim.
No.
Just two Ohio guys.
Buckeyes.
Just a couple yeah. of cooks. A
couple yeah. Buckeyes. And then you mentioned Sequench. And that's right. Like you said... We have gotten more, John, more like when you find white space, it used to be externally. You could go another country, some indigenous ingredient to find white space. In the last few years, we've been focused more on going, you know, smaller into the molecular level of beer. And we're lucky enough to have a full-time chemistry PhD at Dogfish and wow. biology PhD from Harvard. And so we, starting with Sequench, where our objective was to brew the most objectively thirst-quenching beer of the world. That was a fun journey. We have a beer coming out called Super 8, where our objective was to brew the most nutrient-rich beer that Dogfish has ever brewed.
If there's mushrooms in it, I'm going to kill you.
Perhaps. And we got another beer that
so
we really went
peppercorn.
deep on a molecular level that we'll be announcing very soon. So that's been really rewarding lately, is to instead of going to Peru or Egypt or China on an excursion to go under a microscope to try and find the white space. That's been fun.
Right on. So that's three. You need two more.
Okay. 99 editions and the bitch ain't
one. No, that doesn't count. That doesn't count. That doesn't count. And if you read the tagline, it's 99 editions and a double ain't one.
Okay.
And that wasn't mean to you, JC, I promise.
What would be another one? I will say, JC's in the room. We had a blast doing a collab with Sierra. I think it was me, you, Sean. From Lawson's Liquid, Carol Stoud, who kind of I'm concerned about that legacy.
Yeah. One of her beers would be on my totem. So nice. She does that double Maybach.
Yeah.
Have you guys had it? One of the reasons I started brewing was that was magically different than all the beers I'd had back when that mattered. And no matter how much I try to convince people, they're like, yeah, go, which is why I make angry little doubles and don't let anybody have it.
You did.
Make them listen. Anyway.
So at any rate, that would be one of my faves that we did with Sierra. And I bet a ton of brewers affiliated with this room or folks listening are going to be looking for the beer that Sierra inspired a bunch of us to brew.
Resilience IPA.
Yeah. And how cool is it that it's never been a more competitive moment in our industry, but when shit goes bad, a brother puts out a bat signal, over 1,000 breweries signed up to, that's pretty cool. So props to Sierra. Have I given enough answers to hand the mic?
We'll call that five.
Yeah.
Now, first of all, I'm gonna digress for a minute and say thank you and welcome for hosting.
Yeah.
For the subs. John Hall loves a sub.
You're the worst.
I am the worst. It's an honor to meet you. So when you start brewing, and you both started brewing, so you had those questions where people are like, what was your craft beer? What was your whatever? And I've got the couple answers. We make Boat because of the trouble it was getting to on 90, right? So you matter, right? That's 90 flower power and nugget. The first beer I ever had in place was Fat Tire out skiing. And your Triple Bock, which was sold to me next to the certs in a little liquor store in New Jersey in 92, because the bottle was small. And the guy was like, try it. It's a beer. Sam Adams makes it. It tastes like port. Just because I was going to a sushi restaurant. He'd sold me sake and some Asahi. He's like, just save it for dessert. It'll be great. And my dad was a wine collector. So I'm 23. I'm obviously the guy that's buying those things because I'm already there. But it's before anybody's doing some of the craziness we now get to do, thanks to people like you. But I buy this little blue bottle. We go through our whole sushi dinner, and we're done with all the sake, and we're done with all the sake. We open it, we pour it in a wine glass, we drink it, and it did indeed taste like he said it would. So I went back across the street and bought 10 and gave them to my dad for his wine cellar, because I thought that was so badass, and I thought it was something beer is amazing for. But my dad was a wine collector that loved port, so they went into a cellar. And I've had the last three of those since my dad passed. So it's a very important beer to me. So you're one of those guys to me, and that's why I want to digress for a minute and go way too serious for the show to say thank you for all that and being here. But I'm very interested in your totem while we're doing the art and artist and inspiration and what's our school from you, because John Hall, when he gets you alone, never asks questions that's interesting, so do that.
Hey, John asks the hard questions.
It's Jim's turn to talk, man. Don't interrupt.
I like Augie. He sucks up to me.
Finally.
Nailed it.
John.
Yeah. Guess who gets more utopias?
Welcome to my hell. Jim, please.
So, I told you, it's Jim's turn to talk.
What does it mean, totem?
So it's like a totem pole.
God, this
it's
is
your five things
minutes
to build a stack of the story of your life in five beers.
The story of my life in five
your
beers?
Your art in
first,
five beers.
First you're just right. saying boom sauce, and now you're asking Augie a question. you don't know how the show works, and I'm just dying on the inside. Just please, yeah.
All right, totem. So
your totem. Your five beers that talk to your art.
Well, there's one called Wiedemann's. Probably nobody. Well, I get some nods.
We got a favorite beer to talk about.
No, we gave you a mic.
Okay. No.
We tried to buy you a mic. Justin,
where's Wiedemann's
no.
from?
Let Jim talk.
From Cincinnati. Right, yeah. It was my first beer. I was four.
Right on.
I mean, my parents were strict. I don't know why they made me wait that long. I gave my daughter her first beer in the delivery room.
I made my kids wait till
just
two.
A little because
I was like, you
know,
two.
The kids, they get that horrible formula.
Yeah.
So I wanted to give her like hope that there was something better ultimately in her future than like that nasty formula in breast milk. So I gave her a little bit of Sam Adams. She liked it. And my wife was really pissed. I was like,
can't believe
you know, what are you doing? You're giving her beer? I was like, yeah, just chill. Deliver the placenta. I'll take care of the kid.
The thing is, a lot of people will probably think that you're just making this up. I've known you for long enough. I fully guarantee that that's a true story.
Yeah.
Well, and child services, the statute of limitation has passed, so it's cool.
Fine. You're fine. Yeah.
It's fine. Everybody's got to relax. So.
Right.
But my dad, I mean, you probably know, my father was a brewmaster, my grandfather was a brewmaster, my great-grandfather was a brewmaster, my great-great-grandfather was a brewmaster, my great-great-great-grandfather came over here from Germany in the 1840s as a brewer. Actually, there are pictures, all of them, but the oldest one, have their pictures are over on the other side in our brewery. So that was my first beer, was Wiedemann's. It became a cheap-ass, you know, commodity beer, but this would have been in 1953. It was still, you know, really nice, golden color, good hops. That's what I remember at 4 years old. I don't think I rated it, but so that was a totem
I like
beer.
It. Yeah, that's definitely a good bottom head, right? Let's stack on that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, obviously after that, it would be my first beer, which is Sam Adams Boston Lager. I wish I could be more proud of it, but it's not my recipe or invention. It's from my great-great-grandfather's brewery, so it's a very good representation of what American beer tasted like in what was, until craft brewing, was the golden age of American brewing. In the last half of the 19th century, American beers, American brewers were considered among the best in the world. You know, like the Pabst Blue Ribbon, that was actually a real award that they won at a very—
Was it a global award, or was it just American beers?
It was a Columbian Exposition in Chicago in 1893.
Yeah.
You know, The Devil in the White
City. White City, it's so a great book that everybody should read, but it's got the whole history of how that worked.
And it was very contested. Books. They did scientific analysis. They did all kind of, I mean, they didn't have instruments, so they like titrated things out of it. And but American beer was considered some of the best beer in the world. And this is a pretty good example of what beer tasted like. And it's very interesting to me in some ways. I mean, a lot of, you know, craft beers have been duplicated. There's some of the, you know, the great, like Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. There's lots of them. They're pretty indistinguishable. I mean, there's just, which began actually as New Albion, which was a very fun
Jack McAuliffe,
fun beer to make. And what's interesting to me about Boston Lager is, as successful as it's been, there's no duplicates. There's really nothing else out there like Boston Lager that has the same sort of flavor complexity and balance and structure. It, you know, has some kind of, you know, old traditional techniques like a decoction mash that's very difficult to manage. If you do it right through the saccharification range, you create this unique structure of sugars with molecules that are big enough that the yeast can't eat them and small enough to actually taste sweet, unlike, you know, the bigger dextrins and things like that. So creating that particular structure of sugars is what the decoction mash does. And the croisoning, again, is a very difficult thing to manage because you're adding, you know, unfermented beer back in, and you add it at a certain stage, and it dumps in just the right amount of diacetyl and some other interesting flavor from the fermentation that you don't typically get. Those are unique characteristics of this beer. I guess that would be one.
Yeah.
I don't know. Now I'm just—
can somebody grab me one? I'm so mad I had to listen to all that without sipping it. But anyway, keep going. So that's two. I think we're two.
That's two.
Oh, God.
How about the next three you hate? So we don't.
My dad, again, he was a brewmaster, and he told me something which I've never forgotten about beer. Mm-hmm. He said, "Jim, all beer is good. Some beer is better, but all beer is good." And you know, I particularly as we. You know, we as craft brewers confront.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, Meg. We confront the onslaught of big beer.
Yeah.
With their whatever you want to call them, faux craft, captive craft, fake craft, no craft at all. I don't know. but it pisses us all off. I know at least Sam and I are kind of have always been.
Loud about that.
Yes. Yes, thank you.
Drum beaters.
And quite rightly and appropriately so. But we do need to remember all beer is good. And some beer is better. And okay. We make better beer. Yes, but
some
you know,
beer.
Yeah. Can we talk about the beer that's in the fancy special glass that is not black in front
so
of
actually,
us.
So actually, this is gonna sidetrack
everything.
One conversation, but I think we can keep it focused on the art.
Oh,
so I talked about right. I talked about.
I'll end with that one. How about
all right?
My
all right.
Fifth?
So then I'm gonna interrupt because so this show is supposed to be a pretty simple conversation, and it's not often I get to talk to guys at your levels, and I think.
Oh yeah.
Well, you do, but whatever. Anyway.
What I want to know,
the question I think is interesting for both of you, because if I had a thing to, if there's a thing bothering Augie Carton 7 years into being a brewer and self-distributing in New Jersey and using distributors outside New Jersey, it's that I've yet to see a real value in distributors to my business, mostly because I make beers that need to be hand-selled and they're not good at that. I know both of you and the Brooklyn guys, all the people I look up to from my, you know, pre-brewery days, tell me that these are important partnerships and they're very important people. But in the context of my experience with each of your beers, I would literally, before I was ever a brewer, but definitely now that I'm a brewer and I know these relationships, I would put a lot of what I've not enjoyed about both of your beers on your distributors, and in another case, what I've loved about your beers on different distributors. So where I was and how strong your distributor was versus not was, and in some cases in my life, you knocked him out of a bar because of time and the way things go. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
But mostly it was when you had the same distributor.
Better him than Budweiser.
Sure. No, I totally agreed. But what I'm saying is, but in
what
those
did you
places,
call it before the so respectful the, punch? What
the was thing, the, no, no, no. Yeah. But so the thing is, in Jersey, we have distributors almost by county. So I've been exposed to it. But when you guys had the same distributor, when we were all insisting they get craft, everybody quickly adopted you and said, "We got you, craft," and we said, "Thank you." And then we're like, "And we'd like more." And when it was one of the tied houses, they'd grab you and they'd be like, "All right, well, you still have Bud Miller Coors Guinness, and now we have 60 where Boston was, or vice versa." You know what I mean? And I'd like for you to just talk about, convince me or don't convince me that, you know, that these are good relationships and they matter, because I've been drinking both your beers my whole life, and I literally blame the bad times on your distributors and the good times on your distributors, right? They got you both in the right place, and a good bartender talked to a good salesman who said, "You're going to love this fucking beer, you're going to love this fucking beer." And I realized, like, we got you a craft. Just drink it. Mm-hmm. And that's what I never want to happen to my beer. So the two of you, talk about distributors. Tell me why they're great. Tell me why they're not great. Tell me where I'm wrong, that they're not the problem with our whole industry.
Jesus.
Oh, hi. I
too much?
Thanks for coming on, guys.
No. I'm fine with that.
This is the conversation we have. This is what we're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, no, Jim's
straight
got it.
Up. I mean, we were when I started, there were 5 beer distributors in Boston. None of them wanted my beer.
Not a single one.
They all turned me down.
Go fuck yourself. Nobody wants that little beer.
Luckily, I had a partner, a woman who Sam met. The two of us started the company. Rhonda was extraordinarily, you know, passionate, committed, intelligent woman. She was 23 years old when we started. She'd never been to college, but she was an incredible human being. I went back to Rhonda and I said, Rhonda, we don't have a distributor. I'm not sure what we're going to do. And Rhonda had these blindingly brilliant insights. And she came up with one. She said, well, fuck them.
Brilliant.
Can I meet Rhonda?
Why? She has a distillery about 5 miles from here on Boston Harbor.
If she doesn't have a beer, vodka called Fuck 'em.
Yeah. And she said, why don't we do it ourselves? Can't we rent a truck? And it's like, you're right. So we actually did. Our first space was on the other side of that wall. There's a little dock when you go out. It used to be the keg dock. Okay. And we rent, you know, we had a little.
So you were self-distributing around.
We got up to 500,000 cases. So it was we were a distributor, it was a real business with trucks and it was a huge pain in the ass.
Of course, it's the worst, I'm afraid to
but thank God for interns. Yeah.
The retailers don't pay you. You know, every once in a while you have to get on the freaking truck yourself. And it sucks. That's a hard job. Whenever I see a driver from a wholesaler, I want to hug him. Because I used to do that job, and it was horrible. I mean, imagine do you know what those basements are like in Faneuil Hall? You ever try to rotate kegs in a basement in Faneuil Hall with rats? And, you know, nobody.
I used to tend bar in Jersey City. I'm very used
nobody
to
speaks English. You got the same thing in Jersey, so I'm really thrilled that I get to focus on making the beer and do that.
Right,
and they collect the money, they deliver it, they do. All the unglamorous, unglorious.
So, all right. So that being said, how did the guy you let distribute your now very desirable product in this town convince you to let him do it? Once you'd gotten up to that 500,000 cases, once you were in this town, and you guys were doing all the selling, when were you like, all right, it's time to let that part of the business go? Let these guys talk our product. And what did they say to you to be like, to have you be like, you know what? Yeah, these guys. We can trust.
Rhonda sat me down. We talked about it. And she said, Jim,
she said,
are we going to run this distributorship and be a distributor, or are we going to become a national brand? Because we can't do both that easily. Because I was still like collecting invoices.
Yeah.
You know, there's people, I'm not going to pay unless Jim shows up.
Wow.
I got to
see, I like that. That's something they haven't pulled on me yet.
That's a power move.
Well, and then it's like.
That's a savvy barkeep.
Jack's the only guy that can sign the checks. This is Jack Savinor, who's some people in Boston know. They're great meat, you know, great butcher, Julia Child butcher. They didn't pay their fucking bills. And they'd like, well, he's here on Thursdays from 1 to 3. And then you come to find out. That's the only time he's never there. So on your third call, you finally figured out. So I'm going to defend distributors. They do the unglamorous grunt work, and they make all the money, but God love them. I don't care.
No, and you've made a much better case than anybody has yet, so thank you. What about you? There's stories about you, like redlining some kind of Philly and back run with beers. When did you start?
So we never, you know, and everyone's journey is different. And ours was we never self distributed. And I think our state still does not allow self distribution. Our state didn't allow like brewing legally wrote some legislation that allowed that. But we picked our battles intentionally and didn't pick them all. Because I will say I don't think that we have 7,500 breweries or something like that in America now, and it was only last year that we overtook pre-prohibition levels of brewers in America, and I don't think we would have this proliferation of craft breweries in America if it wasn't for the three-tier system. And some of you have visited countries that don't have our regulatory system know that the craft beer movement is very hard if the world's biggest breweries can control retail directly. And I could tell you some horror stories from friends of mine's breweries in Italy in Brazil and some other countries that just got forced out of their dreams by the world's biggest breweries, kind of draconian capabilities in a world where it's direct to retail for breweries. I would say right now it's an interesting moment because Dogfish would not be the scale we are. We sell 99% of our beer through the three-tier system. We believe very much in the tap room opportunity for building a brand. And when breweries get in touch with me and they say, or aspiring brewers, and they say, I want to open a brewery, how would you do it? I always say, try and write a business plan that describes how little money you could start a brewery for instead of how much, and go as small as you possibly can. Improve your brand in your own tasting room so that when you do think about distribution, you have the distributors coming to you saying, wow, you've proven your model on this tiny footprint, and now you have some leverage. Because if you don't, distributors have a massive totem pole of priorities, and if you try and go in without proving yourself and building a brand, it's an uphill battle, and you've navigated that beautifully in New Jersey, and a lot of us have. My concern right now, frankly, and this is why Dogfish is leaning hard into the BA's seal and indie
Brewers Association, not Beer Advocate.
Right. We're in a town.
I'm just here to keep everybody, straight. John. That's why I'm here.
Yeah. My honestly, what my biggest fear is those
hey guys,
of
John
us.
John Hall came.
Yes, he did. to summarize, my biggest anxiety this moment in our industry is that I'm a brewer with Tasting Room Breweries. I'm a brewer that sells 99% of our beer through the three-tier system. My concern is retailers, whether it's our friends at Craft Beer Sellers, or national retailers. God bless.
Okay, Susanna in the room.
Yeah. My concern is if consumers don't care who make their beer, and the foreign conglomerates that are making big inroads into what at retail is perceived as an indie American craft beer, which a lot of times is not, then what consumers go through the three-tier system to buy at retail is a buck a beer, quote-unquote craft beer, a $15 right. 15-pack. But that same consumer might be willing to wait in line at a Trillium or a Treehouse for a beautiful $15 four-pack. And if that happens, where those are the two choices, then we're in real trouble because the three-tier system could disintegrate, and then the little guys are really, really fucked.
All right.
That's
you've both convinced me, goddammit.
Can we get back into the
I gotta go home and meditate on
to
this.
The small clear
anyway,
glass.
Usually at this point we would do a letter, and we're gonna skip that because this is a live show. This is the first 40. Thank you, Thieves at Home. Cut. We're almost done. We'll come back right into it.
Pee break.
One, we'll go on. But in the meantime, I want to thank, because you heard my little homage to that first beer that we had, the Triple Bock.
Yes.
And I believe somewhere, am I wrong, Jim, that somewhere in here is always a little bit of those
couple
first
of
beers?
Percent.
A little bit of the blend that goes on, the Utopia.
Thieves, we're drinking Utopias right now.
So,
really?
So
barrels
of all the ridiculous things that these guys ever did, where they're like, we'll record it at Sam Adams. I was like, well, of course we will. But it never occurred to me we'd all get a little complimentary sub sandwich and Utopias. So thank you, sir.
Yeah, thank you for the hospitality. Nice seeing you, gentlemen.
Thank you so much. And before...
Thank you, Thieves.
I want to hear what you taste, Hall. What do you got
What
there?
Do you taste, John Hall?
So I have judged beer competitions around the U.S., around the world, and Utopias are often entered into the strong beer category, and this is one of
it's
the most identifiable
beer.
Beers. Like, when we get it blind, like, you immediately know that it's Utopia. People often say, like, well, what does it taste like? And I say, it tastes exactly like nothing else you've ever had before. Go seek it out and try it. Yeah, in a beer setting. But it is complex and boozy and just it's warming and inviting, and it really is one of those beers. You hear about a lot of like hype beers and everything like that, but this is one that sort of lives up to the expectations, I think, when people have it for the first time, and that's not, I don't blow smoke, so this is one of those things. Just thank you again.
I blow a little smoke. Dude, he made me meet you live on tape. That's weird.
Isn't that cool, though? Methods
to the madness. I was like, you'll introduce us, right? He's like, yeah, weird. Didn't happen. But at least you weren't dressed the way you said you'd be. All right, y'all. So we're going to take a five-minute break. We're going to come right back into the same show.
And for those of you listening at home.
Thank Mr. Cook for having us.
Yeah,
please,
Jim Cook.
Thank you
for being here. Sam Calagione. We'll be back next week. But not really.
But we are coming back with Calagione, and JC's going to drop in. And to be fair, I should stop for a minute and say this all happened because of Patreon sponsorship. So if you're a Patreon, thank you.
And, thank you, guys.
And
thanks to Justin Kennedy. Thanks to Brian Cass.
Yeah, and if you want more of this shit, keep giving John Hall money to make a left on a plane.
That's right.
All right, y'all. We'll talk to you soon. Get
Cheers.
Out.
Cheers.
Thank you.